You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Hello, I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And you're listening to the Australian Finance Podcast.
A podcast where we talk about money, finance, investing, and all that good stuff.
We're helping you invest your time and money better one podcast episode at a time.
Yes, so please subscribe if you like the series. And don't forget you can find us on social media. We're on all the platforms. Kate, where can people go?
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Rask Australia. That's R-A-S-K Australia.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Owen Rask on Twitter, or Owen Rask AU on Instagram. Beware the imitators. People like to copy us. Without further ado, let's jump in to today's episode. Hey, Molly, thanks for taking some time to join me on the show.
Thanks for having me, Owen.
Yeah, Kate's away today, so it's just you and me, and we're going to talk a bit about the business that you built, the empire, and then we're going to talk about personal finance and some of the things that you've learned from your community and just in your journey overall. I figure a good place to start with, like, people will know you. I know people, we have like shared community members and what have you from across the interwebs, but maybe for those that don't know about you or Ladies Finance Club, if you can tell us what it is, what the idea was, and if you go back to like when it first started, I'm particularly interested in like the origin story, like how did it come to be?
Yeah, well, I'll give you what it is in a tweet. I'll make it a little bit longer, but pretty much I was living in London. The origin story is I was living in London. I was working for in financial services industry. So I was working for banks and I was like, I'm really bad with money. A lot of my girlfriends are really bad with money. A lot of the women I'm working with in the bank are bad with money. So who's good at this? And so what I ended up doing was I started running events in my living room with my girlfriends and was like, someone was like, should we start a book club? I was like, nah, let's start a money club. Let's start an investment club because my dad always had one. And I thought, you know, why don't we have one? And so started running events in my living room with my girlfriends. They would come over and we would get someone who worked in finance to kind of break down a different area of finance for us. And kind of like it grew and grew. And then we outgrew my living room. And then I ended up running events in London, was like, who's interested in this? Our first event sold out. And it was like, wow, okay, let's create a space where women can come together and we can talk about this topic of money, this very important topic that, you know, this thing that we use every single day, but we go out to work, we spend all these hours earning it, but then no time learning how to manage it. And there was a particular conversation I had with a girl when I was working at one of the banks in the UK, and she got her bonus and she goes, oh, I'm going to go buy a handbag with this. And I just thought, like, surely there's something more. She didn't have property. She didn't have any investments. And I was like, yes, treat yourself 100%. But it was like a very expensive handbag. And I just thought, this is kind of wrong. And then, you know, I researched more. The stats kind of, you know, show that women live longer, we earn less. In Australia, we're retiring into poverty. And I just thought, like, this is so wrong. Like, these women, we spend all our lives, you know, working, but then sometimes raising families, sometimes looking after elderly parents. And then they're kind of like given this poverty-stricken retirement. And I was like, I want to do something about it. So that's kind of where it started from back in the day. And also a lot of my guy mates were buying property, investing in shares. And we were like, we spent all our money partying or we spent all our money on traveling. So yeah, it was all about just kind of taking back that control and taking back that power, but making it really fun and social because I loved reading The Barefoot Investor, but I knew a lot of my girlfriends will never read that book. if their life's dependent on it, because they're just not ever going to read a finance book. So yeah, I guess that's the origin story.
Yeah, I like it. Was finance part of your childhood? Like, sounds like your dad was interested in it. Was
that
something that you talked about?
Yeah. So bless him, he tried to get us investing in the share market when we were younger.
Yeah.
Didn't understand it at all. Like, it was still like, okay, here's a newspaper, pick a company and let's follow it. And I was kind of like, what is this company thing? But it wasn't probably until I got into like my first job that he did a little bit more of a like, these are what, and my mom as well. My mom was constantly trying to get me to do a budget, and I was like crying. Literally, I cried once when she wanted me to do a budget. I was like, I can't. I was so embarrassed that all my money had gone on going out and clothes. And, you know, as I always say, like, my investments are made up of hashtag good times and great clothes. It wasn't like there was like no assets in there at all. Dad did try to plant that seed early, but I find this with a lot of our members as well, until, you know, they go, I want to learn this for myself. You know, it's like, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And I was not drinking.
So what made you then drink? So what were you just like in a crisis, or like what prompted you to do it?
A couple of things. One of the things was I wanted to move to the UK, and I was like, wow, I'm going to be in the UK by myself. I've got to get my money shit together, because if something happens, I've got no backup. I can't call my sister and be like, can you give me $100? I can't call my parents and be like, hey, can you guys help me out? Which I never did that, but I knew there was always a bit of a safety net there if I needed to. But I was like, right, I'm going to be all by myself. I need to get responsible. And so then once I had a goal, and then I kind of stuck to that goal, I started putting money away and saving. But then when I got to the UK, I started the bad habits straight up again, living paycheck to paycheck, no emergency savings. And I remember like having to borrow like £30 off a girlfriend for groceries. And I was like earning pretty good money. And I was like, what is going on, Molly? Like, this is crazy. So I ended up getting a new job, getting a pay rise, and really building that emergency fund. And that was the first step kind of for me to like kind of start from scratch, but then really build from that.
How old were you then?
I was in my early 20s.
Right. And so you were going over to the UK just to, you know, do the European thing.
Yeah. I had a few years under my belt of like working the corporate world. And I was like, I've always loved London. Ever since I was a kid, I saw the movie Hook once, and I don't know why, but I was like, oh, I want to go to London. I love London. And I was really fortunate. My parents took us out of school for a year, and we traveled the world when I was growing up. Oh, and wow. I loved London. And I was like, get me back to London. So when the opportunity kind of like presented itself, I was like, and I mean, when it said opportunity presented itself, I was like, I'm making the opportunity like in the next 3 months. It was just a thing. And I did lots of travel. I have great friends over there. And it was just so much fun.
That's awesome. Well done. A lot of people don't make time for it, or they just think it'll happen eventually. I'm one of those people. Yeah. So you said before that with the business, you did a few with friends, and people would come in and talk and whatever. And then there was the first event, which was sold out.
Mm.
Is that when you thought, because your background's events too, right?
Yeah. So I've always been events in financial services and fintech. Yeah. So I worked for like the ASIC version in the UK in their fintech team. I worked for Barclays and a couple of other places. And in Australia, I originally started out at BOQ.
Right. And you thought when you did that first event, like, hang on, I can do this? Is this what you thought? Like, is that what was going through your head?
Yeah. Well, I was surprised. Well, I think the big thing that got me was there was 80 women in the room, and the room could only hold 80. And more than 50% of them worked in financial services, which really surprised me. I just wasn't expecting that.
You think that they would know, right?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But then again, I worked in financial services, so I didn't know. So, you know, we don't necessarily work in investments, but we don't work in, you know,
savings,
budgeting.
Budgeting, yeah.
Yeah, they're in compliance, they're in risk, they're in, you know, marketing. So I think that was a moment where I was like, I think there's something in this. And then the feedback was so good and people were like, when's the next one? Or, oh my God, now I understand this concept. And what we'd do is bring in like really great speakers, or I would work with a speaker who would break down the content. Because sometimes they'll present content and I'm like, nah, it's still too high level. We need to break it down again. Because they jump straight into the, the S&P is up 1.5%. And we're like, that means nothing to someone who doesn't know this industry. So it was really about kind of breaking it down, making fun analogies, and just kind of, taking it back to real basics, because we didn't learn it at school. You know, I missed out on the Money 101 lesson, or I wasn't listening, but I'm pretty sure I was never taught it. As I say, we're learning about parallelograms, which did not come and help this parallelogram season when I was trying to do my tax. I was like, what the hell? Never used that.
Yeah, I can hear you. I know what you're saying exactly. So is that like, so I'm just, because I obviously have a fascination for business and how things start. So then you were like, okay, let's see if we can do this again and we can turn it into a full business. Is that what you were thinking? Like,
oh yeah, no, I wish I had more of a game plan with that. I was just like, that worked, let's do another one. And like the business model didn't come till kind of like after COVID. I was just kind of putting on events, getting them sponsored, and was like, oh yeah, I still had my corporate job. And it wasn't till I moved back to Australia that I was like, okay, working with business coaches, working with a mentor, and going, okay, how do we actually make money for this? I've always loved business as well and entrepreneurship, and I'd tried a dress sharing company called What the Frock, which I thought was genius. Did not
sounds
take
good.
Off. Thank you. But I also found out I wasn't passionate about to, you know, you got to be so passionate about your business to get up and do it every single day. And I was like, women's financial literacy, like, it really floated my boat. I was like, wow. And people come to our events now and they'll be like, that changed my life. How did I not know about any of that? And I'm like, well, we don't talk about it. We don't make time to talk about it. I found that I was very passionate about this topic.
I like it. I like it. So you've come back to Australia and you've started it. What changed with the kind of the business? You said you're like sponsors before, like, and maybe that's still a focus, but what changed between the UK and here? Like, how did you take it more seriously? What did the business coach tell you? All that stuff.
Well, COVID happened. That was a big one. I don't know if you know, but my sister was diagnosed with a blood cancer just before I moved home, and she's in remission now. She's doing really well. Okay, she's got a best-selling book in Australia about it.
Oh, wonderful.
But I really wanted to be back home and be with her. And we currently live together in Bondi. She's my best friend. She's the best. She's amazing. And So I was like, okay, well, I want to move home. And why don't I just set up a business from scratch in Australia? That sounds like it could be doable.
Yeah.
Pretty stressful. So I did that. And so I started running a couple of events, and I was really lucky that by the time I moved back to Australia, I'd gotten up a really big kind of buffer, really good safety net. I was earning very good money in the UK. So then it meant I could just really try and do it for like 6 months, see how it went. I was new to business. I didn't quite know what I was doing in some elements, really passionate about it. But, you know, at the end of the day with business, you're wearing like 50 different hats, and you're the accountant and the marketer and the sponsorship rep and the everything. And then it wasn't until probably like during COVID where I was like, okay, can't do events. Let's set up an online membership, an online community. That people can, you know, pay a monthly membership to, and they can get access to a monthly masterclass with an amazing expert that they would never get access to, where they can get an insurance review to make sure, you know, their insurances are correct, where they can, you know, get a foundation course, and they can get a whole bunch of other things like ours with the experts and money coaching, but making it scalable. So then, you know, we didn't have to do it at a really high price. It was kind of like a lot of, like, it would be accessible to more women. And that's kind of like where we're still at today. So we still do a lot of the other stuff, but yeah, we have this membership that we're growing at the moment.
Cool. I've checked out the website.
Yeah.
And done all
very,
that stuff.
Very, very pink.
Yeah, no, it's good. So if they get a membership, like if someone's listening to this and they want to be part of Ladies Finest Club, they get a membership. It's like two tiers. Is it correct? Yeah.
That's right. Owen, I'm
just doing this all off the top of my head, I swear. Two memberships, and the second one is the one that's like all inclusive. And does that get them like the ability to come in and like check in, or like is there some sort of like online thing that they get?
Yeah, so with the pink one, that's kind of like for the people who love to do stuff for themselves. So we kind of call it the do it yourself. You get a course, you get the monthly masterclass. The diamond is more like you get those accountability check-ins where like once a month we jump on a call, we hear about what are your goals, you know. And it's really cool because people will come along to those and be like, oh, I want to buy a house. I've never bought a house. I don't even know what to do. And it's like, cool, okay. Well, what do you think the first step is? And they're like, oh, I don't know. Like maybe you see a mortgage broker. Great. Okay. When are you going to do that by? So it's giving them real kind of like, okay, deadlines and dates. And then they come back and then they're like, I did it. I did the thing, you know. Like, and they always think like, you told me. And I'm like, no, you told yourself. Yeah. It's really cool to see then people go from like never owning a property to owning a property, never investing to investing. Like one lady now calls like ETFs her best friend. And like 2 months earlier, she was literally like, I have no idea about investing. So the transformations are really cool.
Yeah, cool. Did you, something that I just thought off the top of my head. I've been seeing a business coach recently, and this is something I've never done before.
Yeah.
How did that change what you do? Like, was that like a big moment now that you reflect on it or?
Yeah. So I'm in a guy called Dale Beaumont's business group, and he runs a group called Business Blueprint, and it's about like 300-400 small businesses in Australia. Well, not small to medium sized businesses. But the big thing, I guess, my learning with that was systems. And you know, systems and processes and things like if you have to do it once, record it, give it to your assistant, put it in a systems and process format. So it was little things like that which just helped me fast track, like, you know, use virtual assistants, there's so many learnings from that. Plus I just love hearing what's happening in other people's businesses, what's happening in the industry. And that's where I guess like we catch up once every 4 months in like in live in-person conferences, and there'll be like latest things happening in marketing and social media, latest things happening in finance, best tech tools out there. So it's, I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I call it my favorite cult.
I think it's great. Like it helps so many people in so many different ways. And just even to be a part of that community is really cool.
Yeah.
So I've got maybe a couple more questions before we get onto like personal finance and everything like that. When you, like, as you go about your day now, as someone who runs your own business and it's all wonderful, like seeing all those transformations, but is there anything that you think of or you do say like daily, weekly, monthly, where you like check in with the business and say, how's it going? Like, is there something that you do? Like I look at, say, for example, student numbers on the RAS network or membership sales or something like that.
Yeah. So for me, it's memberships. How many memberships do we have? That's one element of it. And then also I check our finances very often as well. Just to, you know, see how we're going financially. It's definitely something though. I'm always like, I can improve on this. I can definitely improve on these kind of check-ins with the business. But I have a really good team and a really great accountant. And that's something I definitely do. Like a few times a year, I sit down with my accountant and just like, let's go through everything.
Yeah.
It would be probably membership numbers, and then sponsorship and partnership.
How many people are in your team?
We've got one full-time in Australia, an amazing intern, and then two overseas, and then another two who are kind of freelance, come in and out when needed. So we're a small team.
Yeah. You're like our team. It's I think you can achieve a lot if you use those systems and tools. I think you can do a lot these days with kind of just the right people in the right places, which is super. It's super empowering because you don't have the stress of running a massive team or whatever. What are some of the reasons, like common reasons, that women would come to you or come to an event? Like, what are they kind of like, what's their symptom or what's their issue when they arrive?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things. So for many of them, they just, you know, sometimes finance can be quite an exclusive industry. It's very, you know, they call it what, male, pale, stale, and a little bit blue. And I think we're used to being quite ignored by the finance industry, especially like, oh my God, we did some polling the other day. And it was like when couples go into like, get their car done, go into a bank, get their mortgage done, and they get literally ignored. They don't even have eye contact made with them. I think when we can create a space where it's like, this is your space, this is for you, no dumb question, you know, but we also need to, you know, take control of our money. We can't rely, I would say, can't rely on, you know, marrying a prince, winning the lotto, a rich uncle, because there's not many available princes left. you know, and I think for many, like, they might have tried to do it by themselves, or they just feel overwhelmed. They don't have that confidence and they don't want to do it alone. That's the big thing about it as well. But yeah, and we're seeing, you know, a lot of women who might have been divorced or they're separated now. It's the first time they've got the responsibility of the money. And for others, they're just kind of like, I want to learn investing, but, you know, I don't know where to start. That's a big one. Don't know where to start. I'm really scared. I'm going to lose all my money. A lot of people think investing, as you would be aware, is investing just into one company. And if they don't have a lot of time, they're like, oh, so scary. What if I lose all my money? And so we kind of bust those myths and then just break it down and put in a chocolate analogy where we can.
Why do you think the club in particular helps people? Like, what is it? Like, why wouldn't they just go somewhere else? You know, like, what is it about that environment?
Yeah, I think, well, people get to know each other. It's creating community. Also, it's that accountability of, it's in their diary every month. They know, okay. We always say, you know, look after your money now, money will look after you later. So they're on a learning journey. So, you know, they know that, okay, each, you know, in the first Tuesday of every month, I've got my accountability session. Okay, we know once a month I have a masterclass and I'm going to learn something new about finance. And like some of the stuff they learn, if they put that into practice, it's going to change their life. Like, especially the stuff around super and investing. Like, I had a 25-year-old come up to me at one of my events and was like, thank you. I just had no idea. I'm going to start salary sacrificing. Like, she was like, I just literally, no one's ever explained this to me. So yeah, I think it's the community. We also have like a, you know, a really nice Facebook group going as well, where people just literally ask whatever questions they want and people jump in. There's a lot of like female mortgage brokers, but also I think that's just, there hasn't been a space, a big space. There's a couple of ladies doing it, but I think where it's like independent and I'm not an advisor, I bring in the experts. So it's really nice. And all the ladies are so lovely. I love the community.
That's wonderful. Yeah. It's truly awesome. Like what you're doing. So, like kudos to you. When I imagine that a lot of women come to you and they might have credit card debt, they might have been kind of on that, you know, that thing where they're like, I want to buy the latest pair of whatever, and they've got credit card debt. They might have like Afterpay or buy now, pay later, personal loans, you name it.
Yeah.
When people come to the community and they talk to you about debt in particular, what are some of the strategies that you've seen, or what's one strategy that's been successful for not everyone, but for a lot of people?
Well, the first, I think, couple of things are like there's definitely like, we love the snowball method where you kind of get familiar with all your debts. You know, you do the smallest, put the smallest debt down first to the highest debt, cover all your minimum payments, but just really focus on getting that small one down, which you would be all over. But I think as well, just, I'm a big advocate of debt counselors and we work with quite a few, and just saying like, hey, if you guys are really stuck, like we can support you, but like, first of all, go see a debt counselor, see what you can either, what they can negotiate on your behalf. They actually have a lot of power. So especially if someone's been in debt because of a broken relationship or, you know, credit cards, buy now, late, pay later, they're a little bit more hard because they're not regulated. And God, some of the debt counselors I feature, they have like people with like up to 10 buy now, pay later, which is super sad. And they put their credit card, they use their credit card to buy the buy now, pay later, which is dangerous. And you sometimes forget, you know, that happens out there in the world. So yeah, very much the snowball method, and support them during that. But yeah, I would say we probably get more women coming to us who are wanting to get started investing than more on the debt side. But yeah, we love those debt counselors as well.
Yeah, cool. I like the snowball method because it creates like short feedback loops. It's like one's paid down, it makes you feel good. Even if it's not the biggest or scariest one, it's like it empowers you every step of the way, which is super powerful.
Yeah, you're on the road to, you know, you're getting there and, you know, you get that hit of dopamine like, ooh, I'm doing it. I'm getting out of debt. Let's do this.
And that's like another thing which you kind of talked about before, which was investing, is that a lot of people struggle with the first investment.
Yeah.
And I find, I don't know if this is a fair characterization, and it's obviously a generalization, but I find with women, they're more discerning when it comes to investing the first time. And they're more like, you know, what's prudent, what's this? And this is, again, a generalization, but a lot of men are like, yeah, let's buy the latest lithium stock or something like, let's just get in there and see what happens.
We like to do our research.
Yeah, that's it. So how do you, I guess, what stops women in particular getting invested sooner, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think you've like nailed it where, you know, men would just be like, okay, let's do it, lithium. Whereas, and there's a lot more conversation, I think, that happens with guys around money and finance.
True. Yeah.
And, you know, if you go back to the origins, like women weren't allowed to open like bank accounts till not that long ago. Women weren't allowed to have property in their own name. So these are conversations that men have been having with men for generations. Women haven't been having these with their mothers for that long. Yeah. So I think women like safety of cash because if shit hits the fan and they need to get out of a situation, they know it's there. They love seeing the cash in their account. And that's kind of common in the UK and Australia because we first set up in the UK and I'm hearing the same things. So I love cash, but we always say, you know, if you've got your emergency fund, that's when you can think of, you know, starting to invest. And they also think, I think you need huge amounts of money to get started investing. They don't understand that, oh, you can literally get started with $50, $500. Yeah. You don't need $10,000. And, you know, you can dip your toes in the water. The best way to swim is to get wet. So I think as well, we can sometimes get analysis paralysis where we're like, I'm still researching. I hear this a lot. I'm researching. I'm like, okay, sometimes you also just need to, you know, that's why I think micro investing apps are really cool because they do allow you to just kind of get your confidence up. And that's where we see a lot of our ladies start. They start on those micro investing platforms and then they're ready to kind of jump in further once they've got that confidence up and they understand what funds are and ETFs and things like that.
Yeah, I find that's like a lot of people criticize micro investing, but I think for the most part, on the whole, it's super beneficial to society to get people involved in the conversation as soon as possible and get them involved in investing, even if it's $10, because it's very forgiving too. Like you're going to start soon and everyone makes mistakes. So make them small and make them soon because then you can get over it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And as we like, I have like my Oprah Winfrey moment when we do our events as well, like who invests and like maybe a quarter of the room will put their hand up. I'm like, who had superannuation? They all put their hands up. I'm like, you're an investor. You're all investors. And they're like, oh, does the compounding thing happen for our super too? I'm like, you bet it does. So that's always an exciting moment.
You'd need to give them a car though if you want to do the full Oprah Winfrey.
maybe in a few years time.
Maybe in a few years once Ladies Finance Club goes truly global.
Once we go global.
Yeah.
You'll all get cars. Electric cars.
One of the things I heard you say in a previous podcast was that having goals is really important, like having a reason for doing things. And again, I don't mean to pick on the dudes, but I was definitely in this category where I would jump straight to investing and I'd forget like the purpose or the intention behind long-term. It's like I knew, I'm going to make, I'm going to put money aside, make money in the future, blah, 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 blah. But I didn't actually have a goal. So Why do you think that that's important? Because I think the club plays a big role in checking in and keeping people accountable.
Yeah, I think half the time we're just a goal club, like honestly, because that sets you up for kind of what you want to do in the future. Big one on goals. Like I find a lot of women will come and they'll be like, oh, my goal is to save more money. And it's not until I go, okay, how much, what for, by when, can they actually come up with a plan? If they don't have that, I notice they don't make that progress I see the other ladies making. You know, as soon as someone decides and their mindset shifts and they go, I want to buy a house. Their ducks are all over in a row. Like the ducks become in a line very quickly. Once they've got that goal, they're motivated. They've got a date. They've seen the mortgage broker. Yeah. So we're big, big fans of like getting really clear on what it is with your goal. Plus then it shows you as well, like, where can you say no in other parts of your life? You know, it's sometimes it can be really hard being a girl because there's just so many nice things out there to buy and eat and shop and travel. So when you've got that goal, it's a lot easier to be like, oh, I can't come away on that weekend, or like, let's go for a coffee, not a walk, or, you know,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think guys end up like buying motorbikes, jet skis and boats and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I remember I went on a date with this guy and he had like literally like 20 watches. And I was like, mate, how many watches do you need? You don't own profit. Like he'd spent like almost like 100K on watches. And I was like, and they weren't like the ones which go up in value. I was shocked.
Each their own, I guess. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is, this is probably relates to this point, right? Mm-hmm. Is should people feel guilty spending money?
Well, that's, I guess, again, comes back to the goals. If you've got your goals there and you've budgeted it in, you don't have to feel guilty. That's the freedom of having like the goals and the budget. Like you don't have to feel guilty because you're like, this is my spending money. Like in my banking, I have an account called Fund Money and I know that that's my spending money and I can, that's my guilt-free play money. But I think again, when I do hear people saying they feel guilty for spending, it's either because they're not clear on what they want with their money, so they're just constantly feeling that guilt. They don't have the plan for it, or otherwise it comes back to like childhood and how they grew up and they haven't done the work understanding where does the guilt come from. Was it because growing up I didn't have any money and now I have money and I feel guilty for having what my parents didn't, or is it because I've always had so much? Like, so yeah, kind of around that mindset, because the money mindset is made up by the time we're 7 years old. So there's a lot there that sometimes people actually need to unpack as well. And it doesn't take much digging to work out where that stems from.
Mm. Hey, this is just looping back into a point you made earlier on, is when you came back from the UK, you said you had a bit of an emergency buffer, and it sounds like you use that money to start the business like here in Australia.
Yeah.
But could you have, like, what made you want to do that over, say, investing in property or investing in shares? Like, this is kind of like goal related, right?
Yeah. I've always just had like this real, I don't know where it comes from, but I've had like this kind of responsibility that I need to help as many women as possible understand this money. So like, it was a really big choice because like, had I gone back into the corporate sector, you know, I could have set myself up, you know, really well, but I wouldn't have been able to do the thing I'm really passionate about. In hindsight, maybe I could have done both for a little bit. but, you know, for me, it was, it was just something that I was just like, I really want to do this with my life. I really want to help people understand, women understand their money. And I think I also was seeing it at a time where a lot of my mum's friends were getting divorced, their partners were leaving them, and they were left with either very little or, you know, had to stay at work. And I was like, this is so wrong.
Yeah, that's plenty of motivation. One thing that we talk a lot about on the show, or probably we talk about it a bit, but probably not enough, to be honest, is money and relationships, I guess. And there are so many different facets of this and so many ways that we could talk about it, but maybe we don't have to like solve the riddle today, but maybe maybe if there's like I guess like the thing that a lot of people struggle with, Molly, is just even having the conversation about money.
Totally. So
is there anything that you found, and I might be catching you off guard here a bit, like, is there anything that you found that has worked either for you or in the community? Like, any strategies you have would be so helpful for our community.
Oh, so when it comes to like relationships.
Yeah, and money.
Yeah, I'd say actually talk about it. Like, make the time to talk about it with your partner and find out, okay, what does financial success look like for us as a couple? Like, what are our financial goals together? There's so many times I have conversations with even girlfriends where they're like, We just didn't talk about it. And now they're in a situation where there's some of them are stay-at-home moms or they're working part-time and they're like, now I feel too awkward to be like, can I get access to some of your super? Or, you know, or, well, what if I want to go back to work? So I think it's really having those deep and honest conversations, especially if you're going to have kids as well. There's some really important conversations that need to be had, which are just not being had. You know, are we going to send our kids to, what kind of school are we going to send our kids to? Am I going to be the one staying off work? Are you going to be staying off work? How is it going to work? Childcare costs. Because what I'm seeing is a lot of, and this again might be a semi-generalization, but it's kind of not from what I'm seeing. Women see their money as their money. Oh, sorry. Women see their money as family money. Men see their money as their money. So men are seeing their super, well, that's my super. Women are not putting enough, nearly enough away, or they're very much like, oh, I spend my paycheck on the kids. So having really clear conversations and having it early in relationships, and also, well, how are we going to set up our bank accounts? Do we have our own? And we're big advocates of always having your own emergency fund in your own name. But then, okay, well, let's have a group account, and how are we going to pay for things, and what conversation do we need to have if it's over a certain amount? But yeah, I completely agree. I think there's not enough conversations. There's a lot you can pick up early in relationships and kind of certain red flags and things like that as well. Yeah. So even just finding out, do you have a goal? Do you have a goal? Are you saving for anything? Or, you know, just seeing how their spending habits are compared to their income. You know, there's a lot you can observe as well.
Yeah, I can imagine a first date where the guy gets asked, do you have any goals? And they'd be like, most guys would be like, what?
I know. That's why I'm like, super fun to date. But also I'm like, you can put it under like, are you saving for anything lately? Or like, are you going, have you got any holidays planned? Or
are you working towards anything? So it doesn't have to be about money, but you can
What's your five-year plan? And do you own property? What are your investment strategies? Yeah, not quite as smooth as that. although I do ask most people, I'm like, do you invest? Comes up pretty early. And I use an analogy in my event roadshow about diversification of this one date I went on where the guy was like, nah, don't invest, lost all my money once. And I was like, did you invest it all in one company that your friend told you about? He's like, that's exactly what happened. I'm like, Craig did not diversify. I can't remember the point, but yeah.
It happens, right? Like, and one of the things that, I've been thinking about a lot lately is I love the rise of like Ladies Finance Club and other podcasts and channels that tackle the issue with women in particular, and often say like we do say things like a bit male and stale, I think you said, but
not all men, of course not,
but although I am very pale, so I am that camp. I guess the thing that I think the challenge that we have for men is that a lot of men like the investing, but when it comes to personal finance and opening up, we've like you've said, like it's like intergenerational. We don't talk about money, goals, the softer part of finance. It's always numbers, spreadsheets, returns, that type of stuff. And I feel like if someone out there is listening to this and is a podcaster and wants to do the whole male thing and then talk about stocks, but also talk about budgeting, like please go and do that, because I think that would be just as important to women as it is for men. And I think the more we can kind of bridge the divide there in terms of like what's expected and what's not from both genders is really important.
Absolutely. And I do look forward to one day where we can just be the finance club. We don't have to be Ladies Finance Club because we're in a position where it's just, there's no gaps. I totally agree. I think I have a lot of conversation with guys and they'll be like, well, I don't know that stuff either. And I'm like,
Yeah, go check out Equinemates.
Love Spice and Alex for the best. Chat with those guys.
Now, you actually mentioned something before too, which is something that I've come around to in a big way, which is women and men having their own emergency fund. This can often go wrong because sometimes people can hide money, which is not a good thing. But at the same time, I used to think like everything's a team account. Everything's together. Everything, like you got to be one. You're stronger together. 1 + 1 = 3, blah, blah, blah. But I'm coming around to the idea that for a lot of people, having some amount of money is like a sign of independence and strength in a relationship.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's really important, particularly I'd say particularly for women and particularly if there's a family unit, because like you said, it does give you that sense of control. Gives you a sense of, you know what, if I'm in a bad situation, I can go. I've got enough money here. I can make do. I don't know.
Totally.
I'm just riffing, but
yeah, it's so, I think it's so empowering to have your own money. And also it's kind of just like smart. If something happens to your partner and, you know, the rent payments are coming out of their account and their account gets frozen, like, and you're kind of like, oh, I've got no access to cash. Like practically, it's quite a good thing to have. You know, and I do hear conversations where people are like, should women have secret accounts? And I'm like, you know, treat it like you would, you know, how would you feel if your partner had a secret account? Would that make you feel like, I don't think it has to be a secret. But yeah, I think it is. It's that sense of like, if I'm not happy, I can leave. Or if something's not right, then I've got my own back.
Yeah, cool. I like it. My final question, Molly, is if you could go back in time, if you could wind back the wheel and do one thing differently, whether it's in the business, whether it's your finances, just in life and investment, whatever, just one thing, what would it be?
I would have bought property a lot earlier. Like I would have if you knew what you knew then kind of thing. But like when I was living in Brisbane and I was working for a bank, I just wasted so much money. I spent every paycheck. And then I was like, I could have set myself up from the get-go. So that's something that I'm always like, had I known that, I would definitely change that. And then my friends who did do that, you know, it's awesome to see them, you know, grow their property portfolios now and be in that really great position. So that's my one little regret.
Yeah, cool. Well, we all have them, and that's what makes us human, I'm told. So, no threat there. Hey, if people listening to this wanted to follow you or to become a member or something like that, what's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, so they can head over to ladiesfinanceclub.com. We open our doors a couple of times a year, and we also do like investing courses and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, ladiesfinanceclub.com or ladiesfinanceclub on Instagram.
Cool. I'll put all the links in the show notes. But Molly, thank you for taking some time to join me on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast, where our mission is to improve the financial futures of all Australians. If you'd like to learn more, create a free account at rask.com.au/account to download free episode workbooks, bonus resources, and take our amazing free personal finance courses.
You can also join our online community by following the link in the description. If you enjoyed the show, what we'd love is for you to leave us a snappy review on iTunes. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Rask Australia. Kate and I are also on both of those channels. Finally, if you have any feedback, suggestions for episodes or guests to come on the show, or you just have a question for us, shoot us an email at podcast@rask.com.au. InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10, and to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies. Which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can.
The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high-growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high-growth strategy focuses on longer-term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if, you want to protect your family if something goes wrong, you want to protect your spouse if you lose your job, you want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy, insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian Property Podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of Rask Core, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax. I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All Rask users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the Rask community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator Program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number 9, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the Rask YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the Rask network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the Rask Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. Rask Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the Rask Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000, and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support Rask and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the Rask network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.